Thank you. I live in one of those areas where individuals are responsible for millions of acres. I'm going to talk about the role of seed germination and conservation of native plants in the Great Basin. This is an area that's undergoing type conversion from native sagebrush bunch grass rangeland to introduced annual weeds. If this continues, we'll be like California, where the natives have been replaced and it's reclassified as an annual grassland. These things burn these days on the order of every 5 or 10 years instead of every 25 or 50 years. There's introduced annual grasses from Europe and Asia that came in as wheat contaminants 100 years ago. They produce a lot of seeds. We typically plant less than 500 seeds per meter. In a good seed production year, something like cheatgrass, Stromastectorum, can produce 20,000 seeds per meter. They undergo rapid growth. They get established in the fall, grow roots all winter. They can be 2 feet tall. They can be 1 inch tall. When they get stressed, they set seed and die and survive the drought as propagules. And they're highly flammable, so there's kind of a feedback loop. These things burn all the time, and the natives disappear. Even if cheatgrass wasn't an issue, and you can control cheatgrass with herbicides, these areas only really had a good restoration year every 10 years. It's sort of like in the Southwest desert, when every 10 years there's a huge bloom of wildflowers and people get all excited. It's kind of like that in the Intermountain West. This is annual precipitation in Boise, and it's really highly variable. But even in a year where you have high total annual precipitation, the water during the growing season could be much lower. You can have high annual precipitation and low precipitation in the spring. And if you go to a finer time scale, this is the record for May. If you have a bad May, it doesn't matter what you did as far as planting. So weather really has to cooperate at all stages of the life cycle. I'm going to talk about the stages that are closer to seed germination. But this is a pretty dry and variable environment, even without the introduced annual weeds. And we're relatively unsuccessful at restoring or even revegetating these areas with more desirable species, let alone native perennial grasses and shrubs. So this is the planting scenario in this region. I'm talking about the Northern Great Basin sagebrush steppe. You can see how variable precipitation is. All seeding in this area pretty much occurs in October and November for a couple of reasons, mostly logistical. October 1st is the first day of the federal fiscal year. That's when money becomes available. And then you have to get it in by, say, Thanksgiving or the ground freezes. So if you wanted to plant in the spring, you couldn't get a contractor to do it at a large scale because these are very large areas, as you said. You can have hundreds of thousands of acres burned that you're restoring, and the equipment is mostly modified from agricultural equipment, so it's rangeland drills and things like that. So this is when things get planted. Seedlings emerge, or seedlings grow mostly in the spring when, just like in the Sierras, if you're planting conifer seedlings, 10 degrees and rising is when you plant. As temperatures get above zero, there's still precipitation around. This is when the seedlings get established, and they have to survive through this first summer. So a couple of years ago, we planted seed at 15 different sites in the Great Basin. These were the sites I was responsible for around Boise, eastern Oregon, and northern Nevada. We had 2 planting years, and so we had 30 site years of all kinds of plots. I'm not going to get into the experimental design. But what we did find, and what people are increasingly finding, is the bottleneck here isn't really germination. Germination is very reliable in these species. It's more the timing of germination. Pretty much if you plant early enough in the fall, you can expect germination. And sometimes that's a bad thing because the bottleneck is between germination and emergence. These seeds are very resilient. Once they germinate, they're in this vulnerable phase, and if you have freezing, they get killed. What we pretty much found in this study was if you had a good fall, you had bad seedling emergence. So I'm going to breeze through some of the modeling that we have done. A lot of this has been published already. And talk about some new information on planting date effects and how germination and germination timing is important to conservation of these native plants. I'm going to talk about 5 planting dates between the beginning of the fiscal year and about Thanksgiving. I'm going to talk about cumulative germination and population response and the potential distribution of post-germination freezing and drought, which seems to be the bottleneck in this system. I had a bunch of different species I'm going to use as examples. Idaho fescue, which is a really slow germinator. A bottlebrush squirrel tail, an accession that was one of the faster germinators of the ones we studied. And I included cheatgrass because that's the main competition. We had a field site in the 90s that had a bunch of soils and 6 soil pits with and without cheatgrass, instrumented down to a meter that we monitored for many years. I have a colleague in Boise who has something called the Shaw model. It's sort of like hydrus, except it also has soil freezing as a component. It's just a model for predicting temperature and water potential in the soil as a function of weather inputs. We calibrated this model with data from our field site and then put in 44 years of weather parameters to get output for the model to predict temperature and water potential and seed depth. So what we wanted to ask was what would have happened if we planted these seeds on these dates at any time on these 5 planting dates in the last 45 years. We also use polyethylene glycol for water potential control. This is a little germination cell where the seeds are separated from the polyethylene glycol solution by a cellulose membrane that maintains a matrix potential that's in equilibrium with the solute potential of the osmotic solution. And we used 36 different germinators that were computer controlled to control temperature between 3 degrees and 39 degrees. And we developed hydrothermal models. Hydrothermal models are basically models that you develop in the laboratory with temperature and water potential data, and you estimate germination rate for each combination of temperature and water potential. If you're interested in cumulative response, it becomes a 4-dimensional problem. So mostly we do this by subpopulation, and subpopulations being components of the population that differ in relative germination rate. This is probably a 50% subpopulation that shows germination rate as a function of temperature and water potential. And if you look at this face, you get a relatively recognizable thermal response where it's relatively linear at suboptimal temperature down to base temperature and then drops off as membranes degrade and you get enzymes denaturing and all kinds of bad things. And then this axis here is a fairly typical water potential response where you have high germination rates with low stress that drop off as stress is increased. And this shows you the interaction just for that subpopulation. So what you can do is you can estimate germination rate every hour during that 44-year simulation, pull out times where you're going to plant these seeds, and then add up the hourly germination rates. And when that rate sum equals 1, that's the time you predict the seeds to germinate. And this is what you get. Pulses of favorability. These are 2-week plantings in our simulation. This first planting is October 1st. 1, 2, 3, 4. So these first 5 are the ones that we were looking at. It's pretty reliable. If you plant in most years before the end of October, you can expect germination. The question is, what happens to those seeds? Well, we know with cheatgrass, if you get germination in the fall, they continue growing roots all winter, and then in the spring they have this huge advantage. But what happens with these pulses of favorability? It's not a lot of black. It's not a lot of gray area in here. These things will germinate very rapidly. If you have a period that's cold or dry, anything heretofore just sits there, and then it all germinates all at once. So germination isn't really an issue, but germination timing is an issue, because once you get to this winter period, anything that did germinate is vulnerable. This is a distribution of probabilities of freezing and drought. Of course, in the winter, you don't have much any probability of freezing. In the summer, you have a high probability of drought. You can see coming off the summer here, as things are wetting up, there are a lot of opportunities for germinating in this October time frame. Temperature and water stress are correlated in the winter, because when things freeze, the soil also dries. So if you plant at different times during this time frame, it has a huge impact. Most people want to plant as soon as possible. They get the money, they want to hit the ground running. It never happens. Your budget is delayed. Generally, you're sort of towards the end trying to get it in before Thanksgiving. If you're really efficient, you're planting earlier. Maybe that's not good. In this scenario, these are the three species. You can see there's not all that much difference during a pulse of germination response. Once you get closer to the winter, though, things like Idaho fescue might actually have some seeds avoid germinating before it freezes. And if you plant really late, everything is germinating in late February or March, and avoiding that period. So we add a new axis to this graph. You can seed in this period. These are the important periods for establishment and survival. If you seed early in this period, you get your seeds germinating during a time when they're going to be vulnerable to mortality. The later you plant, the more likely you will have some seeds survive the winter period. That can get risky, though. I've had studies where we waited a little too long and couldn't get the seeds in the ground at all. Comparing the natives to cheatgrass is kind of apples and oranges. Cheatgrass is produced in the spring and matures in the early summer. The seeds are already there. There might be a couple thousand, if you've had a wildfire, to 20,000 seeds per meter, whereas we typically plant less than 500 seeds per meter. And if cheatgrass is stressed, it just sets seed and dies. So it's I just included it for comparison. Pretty much, if you want to have successful restoration, you have to control the cheatgrass anyway. But in conclusion, how germination, and particularly germination timing, is important. The bottleneck here is post-germination and pre-emergent mortality. Germination is a lot faster than you think. I spent a whole career measuring germination in the laboratory and speculating about the importance of different parts of that hydrothermal response scenario for the major planting scenario in the Great Basin. That whole potential hydrothermal response isn't relevant. There's a very small region that is relevant. If you plant in the fall and it's early enough, you can expect germination. And we generally plant after fire regardless. And you can only really expect a good germination year every 5 to 10 years. So we have to do everything we can to improve the probability that the seeds we plant are going to survive. If you plant too early, you're going to get germination and you're going to get low emergence. So there's a large effect of planting date, and it turns out the later the better. So late fall planting, you can see germination rate syndrome effects. So we sort of characterize these seeds as slow and fast. I used to hate Sandburg bluegrass. I included it in all of my studies. it's so slow. It lengthens everything. You have to spend more money to study it. You have to come in for extra weeks early in the morning. Sandburg bluegrass is doing very well in this region. And it's possible that part of it is that slow germination. When it gets out there, it survives these cold periods and successfully establishes. So what are the management options? You can plant later in the fall season. That is kind of tricky. But planting on early November in this system would be about the best you can do. Try to get it in before it does freeze. It would be nice if you could plant in the winter or spring, or if you could plant frequently and always have some seeds out there to take advantage of these pulses and hope for a mild winter. That's just simply not feasible the way we fund this. There are a lot of people, though, who are looking at artificial induction of rate variability. These aren't dormant seeds that I've been looking at. But they've been putting them in pellets and using chemicals to adjust the rate. It's probably not necessarily a good idea to just slow everything down. It's probably a better idea to induce some variability so you always have some seeds out there. This was a really good strategy for Layman's Lovegrass. It has this huge dormancy in the southwest. It produces millions of seeds. They're totally dormant, but any time it wets or dries or a cow walks across or anything, there's a couple that are ready for some opportunity for it to rain and be favorable, and they germinate, and if they don't make it, fine. There's still 10 million other seeds in that meter that are sitting there ready to have their dormancy released. Are there any questions? It can get pretty low in different years, certainly below zero, certainly low enough to damage these seeds. There are some people in Oregon who looked at freezing stress effects on germinates, and it doesn't take that much. Zero is a pretty good threshold. They don't freeze right away. It usually takes a while, but in a bad year, in most winters, anything that germinates early is going to take a big hit.
How deep in the soil profile are you measuring soil temperature?
Well, in our calibration, we were measuring down to a meter. We had thermocouples at 1 centimeter, 2 centimeters, and 5 centimeters, and then down through the profile with TDR also at 2 centimeters and down. This simulation was a 2 centimeter seeding depth, which was a little deep. But if you look at most range seedings, it's hard to even conceptualize what depth means. It looks more like a plowed field, and there's seeds at all depths. We used 2 centimeters because that was the highest depth where we actually had sensors for water and temperature.
Are you ever able to get surface temperature?
We had some unreliable infrared sensors, but that's pretty tedious to do. What we do is we use simulation.
So the moral of your story is slow and sporadic. How did the land manage? Yeah, go ahead. Say yes or no. But if you say no, then.
Well, the objective, I think, is variability. And planting late is a crapshoot, because if you plant too late, you're talking about Fort Collins having snow in October. Yeah, real cold after early germination is more deadly if it's right after it germinates.
So how did the land managers, this is actually my question, with a slow asynchronous establishment, how do your land managers respond when what you're seeing out there might be, in your context, successful, and they're getting a really ugly field?
I don't think you get the same kind of ugly. It's not like an agricultural situation. you're really not even evaluating them until the spring. And mostly the ugliness is very low emergence. Right now, land managers are dealing with hundreds of thousands of acres, and they're dealing with contractors, and they don't get down to this level. So it might be that the solution is going to be manipulating artificially germination so that it can be used in the current logistical chain without anyone having to think about it, and once it's out there, it has this variability.
In your graph, the net planting has 48% of more germination for the spring. Do you think this is primary dormancy or secondary dormancy or combination?
I don't think this is dormancy at all. If you plant late in the fall and it gets cold and freezing in particular, they're just sitting there without responding. Germination rates over that entire, under that entire range of water potential and temperatures is somewhat irrelevant. We plot rate as the inverse of time, and if you have these really low rates, they aren't contributing to germination very much under this planting scenario. But when you have even two or three days of favorable conditions, you can get germination. And there's a bunch of those conditions that can occur in the winter. So artificial induction of rate might be the way to go, because you're still going to get germination in the winter, and then winter conditions come back and wipes out that part of the subpopulation, or that part of the population. Something we haven't really looked at. We assume that if conditions are mild enough as seedlings developing, mild in the sense that they aren't killing it, but we haven't looked at that. Yeah, the patterns that we're seeing are you have to have one of those 1 in 5 to 1 in 10 years. But it's not just a year you can characterize, because there's all kinds of temporal variability within the year. So every one of these years we simulated was unique, and it's sort of a probabilistic exercise.
All right, thank you so much.
Thanks.